Hello, welcome to Season 4, Episode 6 of the Shelleybrook MPE Team Podcast. You're here with me, Mr. Southwell. Mr. Doyle, good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
And Mr. Tierney's with us as well. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we've got our second guest of this current season. We've got former student George Cooper with us. How are you doing, Cooper?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on, Mr. Southwell.
No worries. So, Cooper goes a long way back with us. I think at some point me and Mr. Doyle definitely taught you. What was he like as a student, Mr. Doyle?
I seem to remember he was, how do we get the nice way, very conscientious, quiet, but came out of his shell towards the last couple of years in particular. I'd like to say he had a bit of a sense of humour on him as well.
Yeah, somewhat limited.
Thank you, I'll take it.
It was good. George was really good with us, and he was one of our most prominent sort of sports leaders. So you'll see if you look through the history of our Twitter pages and some of the stuff in schools do, you'll see George's face around, which is good. And we're going to talk to him a little bit later on just about what he's been up to now and going through university, really. But let's find out, how's everyone been during the lockdown? How's it all gone this week?
Interesting. Again, really, really busy. It's become busier in the parks. I think that is something that's really been apparent this week. More people going out there and using what the government have said about playing tennis. I know the local tennis courts have been sort of chock-a-block. More people going out and sort of playing sports in the middle of parks now rather than just your cycling and things like that, which is a massive positive. People still need to be following all that guidance. It's very, very important, but it's lovely to see people using physical activity as an opportunity now for them to sort of feel a little bit better about what's going on.
Yeah, I would build on that. I went to the driving range a couple of days ago, and it was quite a bizarre situation. Almost felt like we shouldn't have been there in a way, but obviously it's completely legal. But the ways in which they had allowed it to be, you know, kind of COVID-proof and so to enable us to do it were really actually quite pleasing to see, I thought. Everything was really contactless. You didn't have to speak to anyone. You put the bucket of balls into like a sanitizer bin at the end. They had really thought about everything. And it was just nice to get out and be active and do something a bit different aside from running and cycling.
So we've been to the same place, I think, haven't we, on the driving range. I think they've got it spot on, and I quite like I'd like that to sort of stick around when everything's a bit more normal as well. It's been a lot better. I like the way shops are set up as well. I don't mind waiting outside Tesco for 2 minutes if I get the whole place to myself. I think that's brilliant, and I'll keep that going.
Well, everyone's doing it. I went to the driving range last weekend as well. It sounded with yours. Yeah, I know, believe it or not, I swung a club. But no, ours was, they had made differences, one in, one out of the golf club and things like that. But in terms of the range, I don't know, it was a little bit more lax. I think people were just happy to be there. You still sort of carried your balls down as normal. So I suppose there are variances in places, but then I suppose the sort of the more expensive clubs and the better the clubs, the more they're going to really, really focus on making sure that everything's in the right way, because it'll be sustainable then, won't it? And it won't be locked down again if things do get bad.
George, what about you? Because I know you're a golfer as well. It's quite a golf-heavy
game. Yeah, 100%. Well, I've made, since they changed the restrictions and been able to play again, I've made the most of it, as you can imagine. And to be honest, it's been working really well. They've made, you can only play, I think it's in two. And my brother's back working in London, so we're able to go out together, because obviously from the same household. They've made it, I think, 10-minute times before tea times, which is great, because you go out and play, you're not waiting for anyone. There's no one behind you, you know, coming up behind. So, this, to be honest, it's working a lot better. I much prefer it, and there's not been any problems. Sadly, it won't continue like that once everything's lifted. But now I'm making the most of it. It's good to just get out, and a lot less rusty than I thought I'd be. So that's always good as well.
I think that's the big gain from it. I think a lot of things like that would be really good. And I said, we've all played a bit of golf. Going out 10-minute tee times is brilliant. Having that extra 3 minutes, there's no waiting around. They did that full time. They'll actually get more people like playing some of these games, which might be quite good. And I think the big thing that I found walking off the golf course after playing 18 holes, mentally, it was amazing. I got home that night and I genuinely feel like I'd been sort of worked out properly. I'd actually used my brain to a proper degree instead of being stuck indoors. It was so good. And I really forgot sort of how important sport is like for the mind. I really felt like I'd had a proper workout, which was really good. And I put a post out on my social media just saying that I wouldn't take that for granted again, I don't think.
I do think that's probably one of the, don't want to call it a benefit, but it's probably one of the positives coming out of this situation, that we are going to be more grateful for those things.
Yeah.
How many times have we just like finished a game of sport coming away going, oh, that wasn't the best, or maybe you didn't enjoy that as much? I think we're going to really relish those times when we first go back to playing it, or as close to normal as possible.
Hmm. What about the live sport?
Before, it's us in the sports industry, it's important for us to make sure that we remind people of that over the next year or so, not to take it for granted, and to make sure they get out and use it while they can.
What about the live stuff? How much of the live sport did you guys watch the weekend?
I definitely watched the Dortmund-Schalke game. That was class having that back on.
Yeah, I got through all of the Bundesliga games possible. I think the last podcast I was questioning whether we were going to enjoy it without any fans. I can tell you I enjoyed it without the fans. It was great to have a bit of live sport just on all of the weekend.
Well, for me, I'm a huge UFC fan, and they've brought that back in the past couple of weeks. They've been doing, well, last week they did 3 shows in the space of a week in Florida, and I was like, there's no way this is going to work, you know, because the fighters, they relish the fans, they build off that, you know, because it's sort of an adrenaline sport, isn't it? And I was like, this is not going to work. And they had some big fights, and I was like, it's such a waste to have these fights in front of no fans. It worked absolutely fine. Like, you had the commentary, you had the corners there still. It worked absolutely fine. It was just good to watch them again, to be honest.
It's quite interesting with the UFC stuff in that you could really hear the cornermen and what they were saying. They had quite an influence over what was happening. You could hear it so clearly. And it was arguably quite nice to have that change.
Definitely.
There's been a few bits I've watched. You were talking about UFC. I flicked on BT Sport and I watched WWF, WWE Wrestling. And there's no fans there. And it was brilliant because, like, obviously the 5-year-old me thought it was, like, real and all the moves and everything. If you listen to it now, you can hear them talking to each other about how they set up the moves and stuff. And it's like, oh, this isn't the look behind the curtain that I really wanted. But it's definitely worth a watch. Just trying to do it in an empty arena is brilliant. Like, even just the comedy value is great.
Yeah, 100%. Well, they even did like WrestleMania in front of no fans.
Yeah,
like,
they were going well.
Usually that's 80,000, 90,000 in front of no fans. It almost, like you said, it was so comical. It became quite good, and you just appreciated it and being able to watch something that wasn't recorded months ago. You know, to watch some live sport again.
I think comical comes quite easy to wrestle
in
from my
time. Yeah, you had a deprived childhood if you didn't watch that.
Must have been. Doyle definitely didn't have it, did he?
No.
No way.
There's a couple of really big games that I think come out of some of watching some of the weekend sports. So I watched one of the first golf matches for charity, and I was looking at the setup of how it was done, and you had players carrying their own bags, which is unusual, and then, like, I think they could relax some of the rules a little bit, like going forward.
Shorts, didn't they?
Yeah, playing in shorts. Like, the players seem much more comfortable in that as well. And you think, why are people playing in like 72 degree heat with trousers on? There's no point. And I think, like, that was really good. But watching some of the players like walking off and forgetting how to pick up their own bag was quite entertaining as well.
Yeah, I thought it was good. Like, especially if you're a young lad and you're sort of looking to get into the game, and you're, because, you know, McElroy was there, he had his shorts on, he had his, like, custom Nike shoes on.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of takes away from, you know, and the stereotype of golf, you know, when it's, you know, older men, trousers, and it sort of, that doesn't look appealing sometimes. But I think them going out in the shorts and the trainers, you know, more of a casual approach, chatting to one another, I think it's good for the game. I think more kids would take it up if it goes on like that.
Definitely a few games to come out of all of this, and hopefully some of the governing bodies will listen to that a bit as well. Should we look a little bit then at what we want to discuss with George, really, and just kind of, you've been through the system, I suppose, really recently, so do you want to tell us a bit about your course and how you're fixed at the moment?
Sure, yeah, so I was at Shenley, as you guys know, for, what, 7 years in the end?
Yeah.
Started in 2009, went through the whole year 11, GCSE, then into sixth form, so I graduated in 2016. Sounds about right.
Yep.
Love my time there, as you can imagine. Very good. So graduated, did best I could have done in my exams, was pleased with that. Then went on to study at University of Warwick. So for me, I wanted to go to a top university, and I wasn't too sure exactly what I wanted to do, but I wanted to just sort of give myself the best opportunity to go to the best place possible. History was my best subject at school by a mile, not PE. yeah, I'm afraid, lads.
Yeah.
Probably the same for that one.
The class was definitely quieter.
Yeah, so obviously I've even through school, I've done a lot of writing, doing a lot of journalism, worked at the Dons, various newspapers. So writing was my skill. So I thought, let's just do a core writing subject, go to university, see what happens. So I've been at Warwick coming up 4 years now, about to graduate in the next month with a history degree. And absolutely loved it. And from there, I've kept on the assume that I want to go into journalism, want to keep writing. So I'm now going to, fingers crossed, get onto a master's in journalism elsewhere. Do that for a year, and then it's out into the big wide world. So.
And then I think the bit that a lot of people are going to find interesting is you've done something a little bit unique, haven't you? You've studied over in the United States. Do you want to talk a bit about that as well?
That's it, yeah. So I did my first 2 years at Warwick, and then I got the opportunity to study abroad, which is integrated into my 4 years. So it wasn't any extra cost or anything like that. It's essentially just like doing another year in England, because it's all paid for by the university. And you go over to another country, and a student from that institution comes over to where I am. So it's just an exchange. So I went through all the application. I was looking at all the places I wanted to go. Always in my mind, I probably wanted to go to America, mostly because of the sport aspect. Like, American college sports is such a big deal, like, when you compare it to England. So I was fortunate enough, went through the application, went for the interview, and I got a placement at the University of North Carolina, which is in Charlotte. So I went there last 2018. I went in the summer and spent a year there in North Carolina, which was unbelievable. Yeah, certainly the best year.
One Tree Hill country, isn't it?
Not far off. Yeah. So yeah, I had an unbelievable time. So it's just an integrated study abroad, really. A bit of studying went on. I had a really good time in it. It's certainly, from a life experience point of view, it was so beneficial that I've come back, matured a lot, grown up a lot, gained a lot more skills, and it was brilliant.
So I'm going to ask you two gentlemen, have you got any questions you want to put straight across to George after that?
Yeah, I mean, you said about college sport being massive over there. Just how different is it, and what's the kind of the attitude towards it from people your age? Is there a big difference between there and here?
100%, yeah. Well, for one, they have the scholarship system. So you have the student athletes that are at the college, and any time there's any sports on at college, so whether there's a basketball home game, a football home game, everyone at the college will wear the team colours. They'll get up early, they'll go to the game, and there's a real community feel. I feel like that's lacking. And I mean, obviously, we don't have the scholarship system, so it's always going to be a bit different, but I feel like at university in England, you know, there's a game on and no one really gets behind the team as much as they should. And, you know, you might go and watch if you can, but you don't go out of your way to do it. But there's that real atmosphere in America that it's Wednesdays they have the games and there's no school for that. There'll be no classes on that day at all. So that the pure focus is on sport, which I think is great. I think every institution here should adopt a similar thing where it's just a day dedicated to sport, because like we were talking about earlier, just with mental well-being, it's such a good thing. So yeah, anytime there's a game, everyone would go to the game, and it was a real sense of community, a really good atmosphere. Yeah.
So what were we talking about in terms of facilities over there in North Carolina? Because am I right thinking that's Michael Jordan's territory as well?
Yeah, Michael Jordan's territory, that's the one, yeah. So I mean,
just Air Jordans everywhere then?
Yeah. Yeah, and all the, I mean, our basket, so we had facilities all over campus. It was just blow you away. The basketball stadium was 15,000, just the basketball stadium alone. football stadium, soccer as they call it, loads of stuff like that. And then even just like the general gym that they had, which was just for normal students to use. There was like an indoor running track that went around the whole gym. Diving board, swimming pool, upstairs, three floors, just unbelievable. Like, if they had that anywhere, that was sort of probably middle of the range there at my college in terms of facilities. And here, it would just be be so far ahead of anyone else. So that I think that's what really attracted me to go there from the sport aspect. It was unbelievable, the facilities. Yeah, really, really good.
I think that's pretty awesome. And I think what was your role there when you were there? So obviously you're a student. So how did they get that sort of media journalism side of things in? How did you make the most of that experience?
Well, over there, so I was able to, firstly, because I was on exchange, I had the freedom to be able to study whatever I wanted. I had no restriction about having to do this course or this course. So I picked a few media courses to do and a journalism course to do, so certainly grew my skills there, which was good. So the system in America, they do 4 years of college, but you do 3 years, essentially like being at school. You study anything you want. You can do any course. And then in your final year, you pick your major based on what you've enjoyed for those 3 years. And then you just do your degree in that final year. So I was able to go and just take a bunch of media courses, a bunch of journalism courses. And that was really, really good. Enjoyed that, yeah.
I think I was going to ask the other two gentlemen, if you were going to do it all again, would you have took the chance to go abroad? Because I think, looking back, I definitely would have done that.
Yeah, I most definitely would have done. Just from the sounds of what George is saying there, the sport, the facilities, I don't think you can beat them. And that experience to go over there for any length of time would be something that I really would want to do if I had my time again. I find it quite interesting how all the colleges like kind of flow into their professional sport as well. And being a part of that setup, even if it might be in the journalism side of things, would be quite interesting to see.
How did that work, George, as well? We'll come on. I'm going to ask Mr. Lord about his university experience, but I just wanted to have a think about what the athletes going through that draft system, if you've got any information on that. Mr. Lord, would you do it all again differently?
Would I do it differently? Yeah. I think at the time, I think I lacked confidence at school in terms of the ability to go to somewhere like a Loughborough. For me, having been there with students now to go and have a look around it, it seems probably as close to the American experience of college as you might get. And I was always really interested to go. But I just didn't feel as though I had the ability as a player in the sport that I played to go there. And it kind of just dropped my confidence a little bit. So I made my decisions on university based on wanting to be in a particular part of the country. I wanted to get down on the south coast. So I went to Bournemouth. Brilliant experience down in Bournemouth, loved it. Again, very similar to you, George, I had a four-year course and the third year was an industry placement. But I went out and coached. I sort of stayed there, went out and coached around Dorset and sort of places around there. And it stood me in good stead to be a PE teacher. But now, at this point in time, as I've got a little bit older, a little bit more confident in what I do, I'd really be interested in going and teaching abroad. So I'd love to go and teach, for example, over in the Middle East, where again, sport's been up and coming for a number of years, but the facilities over there and just the culture is amazing. Problem is, I'm now settled with a family and two kids, and whether or not that move is the right thing to do, I suppose the point I'm making is really, even if that lack of confidence is something that some of our listeners are feeling, maybe just try and break through that barrier and think, you know, you might not have those opportunities later. Just grab them, just take them and go.
I think I was very lucky. I got a bit of a chance to go out into Detroit and Michigan, but not formally as part of a course. And I found myself at one point, I told you guys, I was stood in a 96,000 seat stadium, and this was for college kids. Like, it wasn't the professional game, it wasn't the NFL side, this was college kids. And I just couldn't comprehend just how big it was. You had the community out tailgating before four matches, and they're getting these facilities, they've got these sponsorship deals, and it's just massive. And I think Mr. Tierney and myself, we were talking about it just before we come on, but George, what was it like? Did you see athletes out there that were like going into like the draft and things like that?
Yeah, so I was just about to say, so in one of my classes I took an American studies class, just to, you know, broaden my horizons a bit more. And it was the tutor who taught it was actually one of the basketball coaches. She was a teacher and a coach. Because of that, all the student athletes knew her, so they all took her course. So I was in a class with literally half the football team, and they all come in a massive guy, nice track suit. And they're all sat next to me, these big blokes. And yeah, that was an experience. And then one of them, this guy Alex, Carolina, we had four drafts this year in the draft, so that was the most we've had the four players got picked in the draft, and one of them was in, who'd been in that class with me last year. He's gone to the Steelers. So I can say I've been in the class of an NFL player, which is pretty, pretty special.
Love that.
That's yeah. Nice. Yeah, that was certainly an experience, for sure.
And how much of the time spent for these athletes do you think is based on their academics? Like, does it really matter if they come out with the right degree? Are they held back at all? Or if they're good enough, do you think they'll get to where they need to be?
What, in terms of an academic side? Or?
Yeah. So if they were to fail a class or anything, would they be held back? Or?
That's where, and that's become a big topic of controversy over there. Especially at these top colleges. So like the main University of North Carolina, they're known for basketball. Obviously, that's where Jordan went. And they get in all these, they get in all these athletes who are unbelievable basket players, and there's a lot of controversy over, you know, they'll fail a class and they'll get let off because they're the star man in the basketball team, or like Zion, who went to Duke, which was in North Carolina, it was sort of renowned that people were doing his work for him, doing his exams for him, and it was very, very dodgy. And now
I hope that's not breaking news. You just dropped on this podcast, otherwise we're in big trouble.
No. That's like everywhere. It's still ongoing. There's a big dispute over it because all these athletes sort of getting a free pass, if you like. So there's a bit of skepticism of that. But I'm also, I like that if you're going to be an athlete in America, you have to go through the college system. Because, you see, not to be critical, but you see these young Premier League players getting picked age 16, 17. Quite frankly, they're not ready for it, are they? You know, you've seen a lot of cases. They're not ready for it. They're not ready for the media that surrounds everything. But I think in America, you can't go straight into the game. You have to go to college. And naturally, going to university is, I think, grows you as a person massively and prepares you for the next stage of life, whether that's going into sport or not. So I think them having to go and do 4 years, then you know, you're signed by a huge franchise, it mentally prepares you. So I think whilst there might be the controversy surrounding how much work they actually do when they go, I still think it's a really good thing. And it's a shame that we don't adopt it here.
Yeah, I've often kind of wondered whether or how that system would work in the UK. And obviously you're saying there where, and Mr. Southwell said he had experience of it too, where you get this massive local community really pulling for this local college. We don't really get that in any sport here. Even if you think where we are in Milton Keynes, not everyone's a Dons fan. And, you know, I think maybe how that system works in the universities and the colleges, being kind of their local team to build people up to this franchise, I really do wonder whether that would work. And as you correctly said, George, I think, you know, there are these players that get thrown into the game really early and struggle in the UK. Let's use football as the example. I wonder if we had like that kind of collegiate setup through the likes of Loughborough, how that would change our sport in the UK.
But it starts in high school over there as well, doesn't it? The high school system that goes through to 18 is absolutely enormous. So where we put on fixtures and, you know, when we get to County Cup semi-finals and things like that, you know, there's a bit of local interest and it's really positive. But over there, you know, they're playing in massive stadiums even at high school. So, I mean, it's a culture change, isn't it? I think over here, potentially to get to that stage, you would need to build it from the foundations upwards and try to make sure, like George, you said, having those Wednesdays free. You know, if we had a situation where we were able to put that into place properly at schools, like they do over there, then you would then have people almost committed to doing it on that one set day. What they do is they either play or they train to go and play, or they support, and then that builds and fosters that kind of culture, doesn't it? It stimulates the interest.
I was going to ask as well, you get these guys that are going into drafts and stuff, and if you are like the number one pick, you're going to be picked by the bottom team from the previous season. Like, is that not
exactly that, yeah.
And if you have that obviously in football, you can be just transferred. So if you're a prospect in football, you could be signed by one of the big clubs. So these guys, like, they don't seem to be bothered at all. They're just going to be drafted to like one of the worst teams going.
They're not bothered. I mean, you don't stay the worst team for long, which is one thing that comes out of it.
Yeah.
it's because of that draft system, it's almost impossible to say. You might be bad one year, but then the next year you get the number one pick, you're suddenly probably middle of the bunch again. And you sort of build a squad around that. So they're not fussed. If you look, I think NFL, it's less than 1% of college players get to NFL.
Blimey.
Which is evil. So you're happy to go wherever. Like, it's really not a problem. Wherever you go, it's going to be an 80,000 seat stadium. You know, it's not like the Premier League where, okay, if you're going to Bournemouth, you're playing in front of 10,000 people. If you're going to Arsenal, you're in front of 60. Every team is the same level. You're going to get the same money. You're going to get the same fan base. They're just happy to go, especially with the chances that there are to it.
I think it's quite interesting thinking about the prospect of being a number one draft picker in the first five. Like, you are top of the class of that year of all the colleges in America. How many of those people, and we might link this back to a previous podcast, how many of those people have suffered anxiety, have choked on the big occasion, have been the number one draft pick and essentially failed or not lived up to that potential as well?
That's hard. I mean, I remember I watched quite a few of the things on Amazon. There was one about, I think it was the Rams, and they had the number one draft pick, and it was a really young guy, and I think he was a quarterback, and he didn't quite produce it in his first season. I forget the guy's name at the minute, but I think now he's got it going. But for that first year, 18 months, they were worried they'd blown their draft pick on somebody who wasn't going to be very good. And I think that's a hell of a gamble, which would be one.
It's a massive pressure to put on someone who's come out of college. We're the worst team in the whole of the country at the minute.
Yeah.
Our hopes are on you.
Well, you look at Zion, he came out, he was injured. He didn't actually get the chance to make his debut until, I think, midway through the season. So he's only played, I think, 10 or 15 games. And obviously now his season's been cut short because of what's gone on. And he's like, he is going to be like the next sort of LeBron James level kind of star. They're putting a lot on him in terms of like media and sponsorship and stuff. He's going to be huge going forward, I think. Be interesting to see.
Yeah, it is massive. But again, I feel like we said, just reiterating, they are more well-groomed for it because they've gone through 4 years of college and they've had the... In many ways, some of these colleges, the expectations are bigger. You've got the whole state expectation on you. So it's not number one draft pick is a big pressure, but it's not too different to where they've probably been. So, and I think having done that 4 years and playing, it really does, it prepares you better than it would have done without. So.
And I suppose before we bring it back to you, what other sports do they really push over there? Because we've got the NFL, you've got basketball. Soccer's getting a bit of a push, but what else is really big? What's really coming through?
So a few things I went to watch which I hadn't seen. Women's softball is very big out there. If you're a female athlete out there, they go either into soccer, which is why they're always winning the World Cup, aren't they? The women's team. Softball, athletics out there is massive, that was one of the biggest differences I found from here, the level of athletics out there, whether it be track, cross country, that was really pushed, even at Warwick where I am, we have athletics, but it's not that big a deal, so that was certainly huge out there. And then I couldn't help thinking, well, that's why, you know, when every time the Olympics comes around, every event in the athletics on the track, the USA are always front runners, aren't they?
Yeah, massive, yeah.
So that was good. So I went to a few of those events. We had, I mean, even at our athletics track, we had a stadium, mini stadium around the track. So I'd go and watch that, and it was unbelievable to watch. Some of these kids are absolutely rapid.
And George, what's the plans for you then? So obviously, all being well, you're studying a master's next year, is that right?
Yeah, so that's the plan. So do a master's. I'm actually hoping to maybe go abroad again.
Yeah.
I've applied for a course in Holland and possibly Spain as well, which teaching English. So I think certainly from a journalistic point of view, that would be good to go and learn those skills whilst in a foreign environment.
Yeah.
I think then if I take that acting, and it was going to go more. So yeah, go out there for a year. And all of these courses, they have a placement included on the course that I've looked at. so hopefully get placement and try and find work off the back of that, whether that's at a newspaper, whether that's at a football club perhaps. We'll see how many options are there, which is good. So.
That sounds awesome. Mr. Doyle, I know you want to try and link this a bit, don't you, to some of the work that we've been doing as well. Do you want to fire away with that?
Yeah, I think it links really well. I'll fire a couple of sort of questions at you, George, but also ask you to maybe chime in with some of your own experiences, how you got there. The Year 12s at the minute, the single group, are looking at Unit 3, which is professional development in the sports industry. And they've only just started it, but what they're kind of looking at is, the difference between a career pathway and specific jobs. Now, really interestingly there, you've kind of got sports journalism or journalism as the kind of the pathway, but you've talked about lots of variances as to what you could potentially do within that. As somebody who's going through the process at the minute and sort of aiming to eventually be that peak in the journalist, what kind of options were there available within that pathway for you?
What, in terms of sports journalism or...
Well, yeah, I mean, journalism in general, but I mean, if people are looking at different routes, like you've gone the way of a master's and things like that, what other things within that kind of pathway, if you like, could lead towards, you know, ultimately becoming a high-profile journalist, if you like?
And you mean instead of doing the route I did?
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the main thing is to just try and put yourself out there and gain experience. It doesn't necessarily have to be academic, like, you know, try and get out and offer, you know, offer yourself to companies and say, look, I'm happy to go and work for free and just build some experience, really start from the bottom. I mean, because when I was doing my A-levels, I was sort of thinking, was university the right thing to do? And I was overworked. I was doing free work experience over at the Doms, which was great. I was doing work at, I went over to the BBC and did some work. I was thinking, right, you know, I could quite easily start from the bottom and go to one of these places and hopefully get a placement and just work my way up that way. Or I could go to university, go and get qualifications, and that way maybe if I choose I don't want to do that route, I could go another way. University is really beneficial, and I would certainly advise it to anyone, but it's not the be all end all. Like, that there are certainly different other routes, you know, whether it's an apprenticeship, whether it's gaining experience, whether it's going straight out into the work and building up from the bottom. I just wanted to give myself the best opportunities possible, and I felt going to university and now doing a master's, I've got that. But there's certainly other routes.
I mean, it's fascinating. Somebody can go through a route of studying history, for example, but then at the same time be branching out and doing sort of broadcast and media work like you were with the Dons and that kind of thing. I suppose that's what students who are going through this need to encapsulate, the fact that that pathway can take many, many forms. And even, like you said, diversifying and going over to a different country to look at maybe the language side of things as well is all going to help towards that pathway. It's not just one set place where you would look for these roles, one set industry, and if you can't get into that, you know, the local newspaper, then you're never going to get there. It's about lots and lots of different ways in which you'll build that experience, isn't it? And I know one thing that you did while you were at school in particular was you got yourself really involved with becoming an ambassador in a couple of roles with rugby and the YST. Tell us a little bit about that opportunity you took and sort of what it gave to you.
100%, yeah. So whilst I was at Shenley, I was fortunate enough, Mr. South actually suggested going for a Youth Sport Trust ambassador role. So obviously Youth Sport Trust, national organisation or charity, in fact, the main goal is to promote the participation of sport, and success through sport transfers over essentially to everything else, which all four of us can agree that's certainly the case. So I went through all of that application process and was lucky enough to get on to their national youth board. I was the youngest member, so I'd go to various meetings a few times a year, and we'd just talk about, you know, how can we achieve the goal of the organisation, which was great. So I got to represent not just myself, but I think the school, Milton Keynes in general, and that was really good. And then off that as well, we were lucky enough to have the Rugby World Cup in Milton Keynes. I was one of the school ambassadors for Shenley, again representing the school, county, not teams. And that's just, they were just great life skills, really. I mean, yes, they go on my CV and it looks good, but it's more just a case of, again, just really good life skills, and it's grown me as a person. And going forward now, I mean, like going through the application process to do journalism masters, I've been able to use those skills and use that experience to say, okay, I did this, it's helped me. And then they'll look at that and they'll say, yeah, great, fingers crossed anyway. So, yeah, really good experiences I have. And I'd advise anyone, if there's any opportunity to do something like that, then go for it. You know, you only get that chance. And it really separates you from other people, I think. So it's worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing, isn't it? I mean, being a Rugby World Cup ambassador, you know, some people look straight down the line at opportunities like that and say, well, I don't think I want to be involved in organising big Rugby World Cups in the future. But that's not what it's about. It's about going in and being part of that network and putting yourself out there. A big thing to say is that you did this voluntarily. It was free. You weren't paid for it, were you?
No, exactly that.
And again, that shows and it demonstrates, first of all, a willingness, but I suppose from you as well, you're having to go out there every day and commit to something that you're not necessarily getting anything from at the time, physical, that you can see. And of course, an employer in the future, just like you've rightly just stated, an employer in the future is going to see that and say, well, actually, this person is doing it for their own development. If I want my company or my organisation to develop, that's the kind of attitude that I would like to get. And that might sort out, like you say, those that are going to university and those that are not. As long as you've got that attitude and you can build it, that's the right way to go. So I suppose linking your experiences to those that are looking through those pathways, it's about finding out actually what is it that each organisation is going to look for. One more thing, and actually, Mr. Tierney, sort of, you're not drastically, well, you're a bit closer to your university days than me and Mr. Southwell.
You're basically saying, we're old and over the hill, I understand. Yeah, I get that.
You know, people that are viewing the podcast here can see that time's taking its toll on some of us more than others. But between the two of you, have you got any advice for the best places to look for opportunities? Because that is the starting point of where to actually go out and find these things, can sometimes be the stumbling block.
I think when I was looking, a lot of the, like, you can see the university lists, like, for your next steps were, the prominent place was always the Guardian. There was a lot of review sites as well. Universities are getting really good at getting you to do like student surveys as you leave, so you can actually see the students' opinion. I personally think that the best way to really get an understanding of that place is to go and see it, and you know, I think you get a feel for the place as well. Definitely, just go and try it out. You can go on all your open days. It doesn't have to be university. Obviously, there are other routes, but if that's the way you're going, go to all the open days, see what you can, see if you like the feel of the place, if you like the people there, if the culture and the ethos suits you and engages you. And I think that's probably the way I'd suggest it. Just throw yourself in and check that it's the best decision for you.
There is also the UK sport website is awesome. If you want to go down the sport route, they have they literally, that is where you find those jobs that you sort of joke about a bit. Like if you want to be a coach for Liverpool or a scout or a data analyst, you go and look on the UK sport site and they have like internships on there as well. And I think, I remember saying this to George a long time ago. I said, just like chance your arm, just ask whoever and see if they'll take you on, because what's the worst that's going to happen? Like they can just say no. So just chance your arm, go
exactly.
For it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's what my dad always tells me, you know, if you want to work for a football club, write to every football club that you know and say, look, I'm happy. I'm enthusiastic. This is what I want to do. I'm happy to come and work for free and just see how everything operates. And you know, you might message 20 clubs. One of them's going to say, "Yeah, sure, come along." And then you know, you're in. You're starting your journey. So don't be afraid to just whatever you think you might be interested in. Just put yourself out there and try and get some experience, really.
You'd be surprised the amount of organisations that'd be happy for a little bit of free labour, really, free working. So if you can put yourself in that position to go and do it, that'd be great. I mean, a lot of people go straight to those job sites, don't they, straight away, like Reed and Indeed and those ones that you see on the telly. But you're right there, that's a good bit of advice, Mr. Southwell. I looked at that very much when I was at university and going to get my first job. My first job was at a play ranger. It was called a play ranger. And that job was listed on the UK Sport website alongside coaching for the ECB, for the, you know, the elite professional cricket development coach and things like that. They basically scrape all of the jobs that are available and also voluntary opportunities that are available. So UK Sport being the one of the organisations for people to go and look at. I think that's really good advice, really sound advice for the guys. Hopefully that's going to help them with their coursework. And brilliant to get your views on it as having gone through it recently. Thanks ever so much.
George, got one more question for you before you go. What's the best experience you've had? Like, what's the thing you've gone, this is really cool?
Good question.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think it would probably, from my point of view, be running the big screen and the Year 10 Stadium MK, Shenley Brook End, Victors on that day, I believe.
Yeah. I did a stunning job that day. When maybe not the biggest, but one experience was when Man United came and played MK. I was doing, that was when I was sort of writing, doing the media stuff then. And I was able to, I had my all access pass and I was able to go wherever. And after the game, it was when United had just signed Di Maria that day. So you had, they'd set up a conference room in the back to basically, he wasn't there, but they were announced the signing of Di Maria. So it was Van Gaal and his media man in there. And there were journalists from all over the world, like Guillaume Balague was there from Sky Sports, Spanish reporter. Everyone just in this room. They didn't care, you know, it just lost 4-0. Like, it wasn't even a question. They were all, it was Di Maria, Di Maria, Di Maria. And I was able to just sit there and just watch all these elite journalists in there. Louis Van Gaal at the front. That was pretty special. So.
That's perfect.
And is that the biggest, is that one of the biggest names that you've met as well? Like, you sort of brush shoulders with?
Yeah, I'd say so. Even doing the rugby, we got to meet, I think you were with me, Mr. Doyle, when we went to, when we went to Twickenham, we got to meet Delalio, Greenwood, all the England names were there, which was excellent. From a rugby standpoint, it doesn't get much bigger than that.
Yeah, you're a world record holder, aren't you? You got the world record for the world's largest scrum.
Basically, yeah. I live off that.
That's awesome.
Lovely.
That seems like a good place to bring things to a halt. George, thank you for giving up your time. I appreciate that, because you are literally in the middle of finishing your course, aren't you, at this point? You have got the... You're in a very unique spot in this scenario.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, a couple more weeks now, and I'm done, so...
Mr. Southall, before we go, I do think that there are a couple of questions that all new guests... need to answer.
Oh, you're right, we need to grill him on a few more. So I did set you a bit of homework, George, as we would have done at school.
Used to always do it as well, so
well, that's debatable. What is your favourite moment in sport?
Favourite moment is actually also my earliest memory was when we won the World Cup in 2003, Rugby World Cup. Like, that is literally my... Whenever I think back, that is my earliest sporting memory.
How old were you then?
And it is 5, I think.
Wow.
And I remember watching it in the living room with my dad, because he's a huge rugby fan, just screaming when it went back to Johnny Wilkinson. And that weak foot as well. Johnny Wilkinson on his weak foot winning the World Cup for us.
It's a popular moment, that one, isn't it?
That's got to be. I mean, nothing's come close to that, really. We haven't... And obviously, you know, the occasional Olympic moment, like the Super Saturday when we had the 3 gold medals was good.
Yeah, that was Mr. Tierney's one. I think he loved that.
That was mine. Loved it.
What about your role model, George? Who's your role model in sport?
My favourite sportsman ever is Nadal. Rafa Nadal.
Yeah.
100% role model. I think he's got the perfect balance of hard work and natural talent.
He's my mum's favourite, but for a different reason.
I'm sure they were saying that. I remember I went to Wimbledon in 2010, the year he won it.
Oh, lovely.
Just the level of professionalism, unbelievable. So, yeah, fully in the dark.
And then our last question is, you've got to perform one skill to save the world. What is that skill?
I'd sell you a set of golf clubs, Southwell.
Yeah, I think that is awesome. You've got previous for that. That is brilliant.
I don't think it takes much, does it, to get you
No, I was going to say, you could have just wave it in front of me and I'll be fine. Well, I'll tell you
what.
That's a good one, that, George. I'll tell you what, that's a perfect way to end this podcast. Thank you so much for giving up your time. That was spot on.
No, thanks for having me, Matt. It's a pleasure. It's been really fun.
Mr. Cheers, Tierney, George. Mr. Doyle, thank you very much. We'll see you guys next week.
Lovely. Take care, everyone.
See you, everybody.
Bye.